Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
More and more homeless are counted in the streets of Portland. President Obama is going to withdraw troops from Afghanistan. And Newt Gingrich's presidential campaign falters because he likes to buy a lot of jewelry.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed! For this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Wednesday, June 22nd, 2011. The latest numbers are in on Portland's homeless problem, and it's worsening, despite tens of millions of dollars spent on the problem over the last 5 years.
Have we tried buying them homes?
I think that must be the next step.
Okay.
The most recent count shows homelessness is up 7% overall. There are now more than 1,700 people sleeping on the streets and about 1,000 more sleeping in shelters and low-rent or subsidized motels. Portland Housing Commissioner Nick Fish says, that's too many. And we have to redouble our efforts, but it can't obscure the fact that we've had great success with our existing programs.
Okay, again, maybe homes are the answer. I mean, if we're spending the money anyway, I'm just saying, I forget who it was that made this observation, but they're not really homeless. They're just houseless. So if I slash you slash we slash everybody's going to be paying tens of millions of dollars, just buy some goddamn houses. Problem solved.
Also, I'm thinking Nick Fish may be overstating things a bit if he says we've had great success with our existing programs, and yet homelessness is still increasing.
Well, he means great success.
Oh, in quotation marks.
See, in the story, you can't see his air quotes.
Right. Okay, and by success, he means...
It's ironic success, Don.
Yeah, all right. The city has placed 7,000 homeless people into stable housing since it began its decade-long anti-homelessness mission 5 years ago. It began a decade-long mission
Don't even
what?
Ask. Just go forward.
Continued high levels of unemployment, cuts in state and federal health services, and other factors have greatly challenged that mission, city officials said. A Vietnam veteran named David, who lost his home to bank foreclosure, says he's not surprised by the numbers. I predict homelessness is going to be on the rise, says...
This guy on the street.
Homeless guy, okay. David.
Literally a man in the street.
I am in a homeless shelter right now. I'm trying to get legal assistance. I've got no money. I've got to come up with some money to get my home back, and I will get my home back.
Does this mean that we're gonna quit the mission in 5 years from now? If it's a decade long, but it started 5 years ago, does that mean we're only given another five and then we're done?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say so.
Well, fair enough.
Fish says the city must stay the course. We know what the long-term solution is. Homes with services for people that need it, he said. It's expensive, but we get great outcomes, and it's humane, pragmatic, and I think it's the right thing to do.
Seriously, can't we just, build some sort of titanium cement home of the future somewhere and just stick it in a field and just say, look, it's there, go live in it if you like.
You know, but they've tried that in other cities, and that's how you end up with the projects. It never seems to really work out in the long term the way cities hoped it would.
Well, I guess it's all relative. I mean, I guess you can live in a bad house or you can live on a bench. I mean, really, if you prefer the bench, hey, have at it. They're everywhere. So, I'm just saying. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later in the hour, you get your entertainment news. Also, science on the march. It's me cracking my knuckles. Hold on.
Yes.
Wait. There we go. Other things of that nature. Next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program at rickemersonshow.com. Today, Peanuts Watch, Obama Watch, and Ms. Anna Griffin are going to be joining us in the studio today as she prepares to head east to become a Nieman Fellow at, Harvard. So she's going to be in the studio with us later on. That is at rickemersonshow.com. This hour, though, you got your entertainment news, your science on the march, all of it available later on today as well via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here, Cascadia.fm or LegionofNews.com. You can also take it with you on your mobile device. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Mobile.cascadia.fm.
In a nationally broadcast speech tonight, President Obama is expected to announce the...
Who?
Barack Obama.
Okay.
You may have heard of him.
No.
He's the president.
Okay. You say so.
Mr. Obama.
All right.
He's expected to announce the withdrawal of 30,000 U.S. troops from Afghanistan by next year. Former Afghan President Abdullah Abdullah weighs in.
Okay.
The president's so nice, they named him twice.
I don't want to laugh, because if I laugh, then he'll open with genocide, you know, or something horrible.
It is a realistic number, too much, not too less.
Wait a minute, hold on, I know that voice.
At this point, we are only hopeful that...
If this guy was more trebly, hold on a second, let me see if I can just...
I guess at this point, we are only hopeful.
It is a realistic number, not too less, but at the same time, it has to be evaluated during the process... according to the circumstances and conditions on the ground.
It is completely the same guy.
And once again, he said something that could be applied to just about anything ever.
Well, that's what he does. That is the skill of that guy.
He's a genius. Abdullah, if that is really his name, says two factors are needed for a successful transition.
Let's see. What is pancakes, by the way?
The ability of the Afghan government, the Afghan leadership, and the Afghan institutions to shoulder responsibility, and also how to use for the U.S. its leverages on Pakistan to stop supporting the Taliban.
All right. Are we at the end of the story? Do you have more to say about it?
No, I'm done.
All right. So this is tonight that he's going to make this speech?
That's what they're saying.
And he's going to say what?
That we're withdrawing troops from Afghanistan.
Is that how we were going to withdraw from Iraq?
Yeah, except that we might actually do it.
We don't ever withdraw from anywhere. Anywhere we've ever been. You know, we're still... I don't think people realize this. You know, we're still in Korea.
Yeah.
I mean, the same place we were literally like 55 years ago.
No, we're still in Germany. We leave people everywhere.
I mean, we don't ever... We're just sort of, you know, we're like a bad house guest or like those last few mothballs you could never find in the folds of your suit. And they're just there sort of stinking up the joint.
Like those weird little ants that smell when you squish them.
I don't think I know what those are.
Oh, yeah, there's a couple of different kinds of house ants. I know this because my husband briefly worked for Terminix. And one of them, the really super tiny little ones, mm-hmm. if you squish them, they give off a very strong odor.
Scent of death?
A weird, sweet kind of a smell.
Is that like a defense mechanism somehow?
I guess, yeah. Right. But it's weird.
By the way, let's just see really quickly if I can do this. I've tried to make the generic news bite guy sound even more like the Afghan guy. Hold on a second. Let me see if I can just play this here. No, that's too much treble.
Yeah. Now he just sounds like he's very far away.
He can't even be heard.
Talking through a walkie-talkie across the room.
No, that was foolish of me. I don't know what I was doing there. All right. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. I'm not trying to be cynical about it. I'm just saying that I think if we've heard things very similar to this from a guy very similar to the man you claim is president before. Let me just, if I can...
I will promise you this, that if we have not gotten our troops out by the time I am president, It is the first thing I will do. I will get our troops home. We will bring an end to this war.
Wait.
You can take that to the bank.
So any day now, any moment now, any instant now, that's going to take place.
So that was Iraq he was talking about.
Exactly.
But this is Afghanistan. Remember, so does this count?
By the way, can I just... Well, this is his generic soundbite. Like, we have our generic soundbite. This is his generic for like, wherever we happen to be in the world, it'll be Libya next, and he can just use the same. I swear to God, we're going to end the war and not start any more until we finish the ones we've got.
You can bet your house on it,
and your,
he says.
And your bippy.
Yeah. Dollars to donuts. We are bringing them home.
Obama's like the J.J. Abrams of wars, where it's like he constantly just gets distracted by a brand new one and forgets to finish the one that he already had going over here, and then it just drifts off into obscurity and oblivion and just trends downward because he's not there to keep an eye on things. The other thing is, whoever you are, I hope you're listening, because when we were, this was, I think, when we were at KUFO, so it would have been 2009, it would have been 2 years ago. I remember we were doing a story very similar to this one, and I was making the observation that I swear to God, the guy said he was going to get us out of Iraq, yet we're still there, and some jackass, and it was him and several other menses called up during the course of the show, and were like, give me this long lecture that we were, in fact, already withdrawing from Iraq, like, as of that moment. Like,
really?
That week, we were just bringing everybody home, which I don't think actually happened.
No.
I think that's a thing that was just sort of made up. I think that's a fiction that was passed on
to
us.
No, that didn't actually happen.
No, I think I would have noticed that. There would have been something in the paper about that.
Yeah, we would have probably talked about it on the major news networks and such. Well, Republican presidential hopeful Newt Gingrich has a second line of credit at the upscale jewelry store Tiffany & Company, for as much as $1 million, his campaign admitted late Tuesday.
Why do you need a second line of credit if you've got a first line of credit?
Well, good question. He would not discuss when the line of credit was taken out, what it was used to purchase, or when it was closed. This comes a little more than a month after personal financial disclosure forms for Gingrich's wife, Kalista, showed that the family owed between $250,000 and $500,000 to the jeweler in 2005 and 2006. A campaign spokesman, Joe DeSantis, broke the news of the second line of credit to the Washington Post, telling the paper that Gingrich's forthcoming personal financial disclosure filings will show that he and his wife had a line of between $500,000 and $1 million at Tiffany's, and that it has a zero balance, and it's been closed. Gingrich's presidential campaign has struggled mightily since its inception. In addition to the earlier Tiffany's disclosure, Gingrich has also taken heat from conservatives for his criticism of Paul Ryan's budget plan and has lost a number of top campaign staff in key early primary states. The exodus continued this week with the departure of two of his top fundraisers, Jody Thomas and Mary Heitman. Rich Galen, a former senior aide to Gingrich, said, these are two very talented women who are very well known in Republican fundraising circles. If they couldn't get the job done, the job won't get done.
I think you mean Newt Blingrich.
Woo! Blingrich.
There you go. Fantastic. You're listening to Legion of News here at...
very good.
What?
Blingrich.
Oh, I thought you meant the rim shot itself.
Well, that too.
All right. Thank you for joining us. It is Wednesday, June 22nd, 2011. Yesterday, first day of summer, yes?
Sure, why not?
I think it was. Because yesterday was the first anniversary, and didn't it work out nicely for us that like the first day of summer was also the first day we were doing the show, and then we thought it was just sort of it all synced up nicely on
and
the calendar.
Groundhog saw his shadow, and then put on some sunscreen, and
All right, yes, it is the today is the second day of summer. Apparently, I only asked because
can't you tell by my tan?
Well, this means that we're now finally marching toward the long slide of darkness again, which is really the best time of the year for me.
Yeah, because
I don't dig this. I don't with this jive of the sun being out like all the time. So
no, and I think I've talked about this before. It's
not that's really a problem this year.
Well, it's this thing of like I grew up thousands of miles to the south, and so my entire life I had this sort of you get this sense of when it will get dark at night. And when it gets light in the morning. And then I had never experienced the whole long day thing until I took a trip to Canada. And I was walking around like in downtown Vancouver or something and trying to figure out why the stores were closed when it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And it turned out that it was actually 8:30 at night.
I don't understand. Well, you look up in Southern California, but you have, I mean, you don't have seasons there as such. But the sun's not always out the same amount of time every day.
No, but the further north you go, though.
Oh, the more extreme the changes are.
Yeah, okay. And so when I moved here.
I see.
In the summer, when the first summer, in fact, still to this day, I still have trouble getting used to the fact that, like last night, for example, it was still
light
like
at
light
11
out at
p.m.
quarter after 9.
Yeah.
And Patrick's going, what time is it? I said 9:15. He's like, no. And I was like, yeah, you know. And it just completely screws with my head.
Hence my Mrs. Howell sleeping mask. I'm not making that up, by the way. It doesn't actually say Lovey Howell on it or anything, but I mean, that's the...
In fact, when I first lived here, I was going to a culinary school, and I had to get up ungodly early for some of my classes sometimes in the morning. And one summer, I had a really early class, and it would be like 10:30 at night, and there would be like kids in the pool at the apartment complex where
chasing
I lived.
Chasing barrel hoops.
And it would still be bright sunlight out, and I just hated everyone and everything.
You don't know hate until you were trying to get to bed at 7:30 at night because you got to get up at 3 a.m. to play Kings of Leon for Idiots. And you're sitting, and children outside are like chasing the good humor truck, and you're just going, die! Die! And that's when I started wearing the sleeping mask because it was so bright out. Because I talked to my friend Ian, who had worked for a long time in the Mike and Amy show and had to get up every morning. He was saying thing. I was like, dude, how many? He's just like, oh, it sucks. It's hell. It's impossible to get to sleep. And so he was the one. He's like, she told me, he's like, dude, here's the thing. I know this sounds a little gay, but you got to get yourself to like a Brookstone and buy one of those padded sleeping masks like Mrs. Howell wore. And I said, really? And he goes, seriously, Mrs. Howell, the sleeping mask, do it today. And I went and I bought one. I put out, and I'll be goddamned if it didn't put me right to sleep. So now, though, years later, I cannot, no matter where I am, no matter what time of year it is, doesn't matter. It could be in the depths of winter, and I have to have that thing on my face to sleep, or it's just like... So now it always looks like I've just... Like, if you ever come to my house, it looks like you've interrupted a bondage shoot of some kind.
So there you are in your boxer shorts with the alligators on them.
Yeah.
With your Mrs. Howell sleeping mask.
Exactly.
Surrounded by your tiny white fluffy dogs.
I'm all man, Don. Listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm, here is Don Taylor.
Police say a man snuck into Oregon Health and Science University in a surgeon's scrubs with a fake ID badge and pretended he was a plastic surgeon while handing out medical advice to at least one patient.
Awesome.
Lucas Orlin Ebert, a 21-year-old who lists Westview High School on his Facebook page, is now charged with criminal mistreatment and theft. The victim, who claims she received advice from Ebert, said he told her in June to stop taking her medications. She says she followed his instructions. Oh, I shouldn't laugh at this because it's actually horrible.
Well, no, but was it just in the plastic surgery wing?
Yeah,
I guess. Well, then who cares if those people quit taking their medications? F them.
I guess she followed his instructions and experienced 5 panic attacks as a result and was forced to move from a walker to a wheelchair.
Well, she was already in a walker?
Yeah.
What kind of plastic surgery is this? On her feet?
Well, she could have been like, maybe she was going down the hall.
A burn victim.
Maybe, yes.
Now, I'd feel bad if she was a burn victim.
Yeah, I bet she was.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I laughed now. A court affidavit shows police reports indicating there is surveillance video of Ebert pushing the victim out of the hospital's main entrance. The court papers also go on to say Ebert wrote bad checks during a 2-week stay at the Hilton Hotel in downtown Portland. According to the affidavit, Ebert admitted to detectives he tricked the hotel staff for 2 weeks. He was arraigned Tuesday in county court. On his Facebook profile, he lists other personal information, such as the ability to speak French, Bulgarian, Spanish, German, and Korean.
What, is he like our own, like, Frank Abagnale or whatever that guy's name is?
Just not very good at it.
Yeah.
On the social networking page, he claims he's worked at OHSU and Microsoft. For his education, Ebert posted he studied law, political science, medicine, business, psychology, and plastic surgery at various universities, including the University of California, San Francisco, Oregon State, and the University of Great Falls in Montana.
If it took more than 4 minutes to catch this guy, really, law enforcement is falling down on the job.
And he's 21.
Okay. It seems implausible that any of those things would have been true, that anybody would have believed those things.
Yeah.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Bottom dollar carrier Spirit Airlines has announced that it will soon begin charging travelers $5 to have a boarding pass printed by a Spirit staffer at the airport. The fee will start appearing this week, and will not be applied to travel before November 1st. On that same date, Spirit will counter the extra cost by lowering fares on nonstop flights by $5 each way.
Well, what's the point of that?
For now, there'll be no fee if you print the pass on your own or at an airport kiosk.
This is...
However, Spirit says it will also start charging $1 for printing the pass at the kiosk starting next summer.
Wait, hold on. Let's everybody stop. They're going to charge $5 now if you have the guy printed, but they're going to balance that by dropping the cost of the airfare. They're going to start charging next year $1 to print it yourself at the kiosk, thus sort of saying you got to print it at home. Here's why, though. I figured it out. Because the deal is, it's the short con and the long con. So they're apologizing for the short con by saying, well, look, yeah, we're screwing you here by having us charge you $5 for printing out the boarding pass, but we're going to drop the price of the ticket $5. The long con, though, is like next year or, like next month. they're going to go back to their regular airfare, knowing that that is a less noticeable cost, because a $5 difference in a $400 flight or whatever is much less noticeable than $5 where it was free before. So that's exactly what that is.
Well, also, and I have a feeling that they also kind of figured out that, you know, they keep raising their prices. Airlines keep raising their prices and saying that they're, you know, charging baggage fees and things like that because of the rising price of gasoline. Maybe somebody's finally starting to figure out that printer ink costs like $300 a gallon.
Yeah, I suppose. It doesn't cost $5 for a boarding pass, though. I mean, that's just screwing you.
No, it's all just screwing you.
I mean, that's the thing.
There's also the actual time, you know, the minute or so that it takes, the 30 seconds that it takes the employee to do it. I suppose if you amortize those 30 seconds over a period.
It's not $5. Okay. In no world is that $5.
But it's
a screwing you fee. That's totally what it is.
Well, it's a screwing you fee in the same way, I think, that when banks started, Bank of America at one point, I'm not sure if they still do, but they used to charge you transaction fees to get anything done
right in
the bank.
If you wanted to talk to a teller.
Yeah, because they just didn't want you to go in there. They just wanted to kind of train you to do it yourself. So they figured the best way to do it was to start charging you money.
Yeah.
And so people would learn to use the damn ATM and learn to use the online banking because that way...
Which I guess is kind of fine by me. I mean, they didn't really have to train me. They could have just asked. They could have said, do you want to avoid talking to human beings? And I would have gone, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like at Safeway. They don't have to train me to use the U-Scan things. If they'd leave those things open 24 hours a day, I'd use them 24 hours a day. Why do they turn those off at... I don't understand that. They turn off the goddamn U-Scan things at 9 p.m., so when I go in, because I do all my shopping, like, after midnight, because then the store is empty. But, of course, because the store is empty, I always have to go find the one clerk who's always busy, like, mopping something or unpacking cartons of toilet paper. And then it takes me 20 minutes to get his attention and get him to walk up to the register. It's a huge pain in the ass.
And then if you're like Robert Wagner here on Cascadia, and I'm not telling tales out of school, he talked about this on his show.
Is this going to be about toilet issues?
No, this is more about the fact of not getting help from the employee of the store.
Does he do the thing that I do where he picks up the in-store intercom and demands service?
No, I think he just very forcefully explained that, you know, a couple of different times that he really, really, really needed help with the U-Scan machine, and they kicked him out of the Safeway.
All right, then. Being kicked out of the Safeway for U-Scan belligerence is sort of awesome, actually.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty badass.
No, my thing is I'll go up to that big metal pole where they have the little red telephone that says press zero for the all page, and I'll just say, like, I'm a customer at the front desk, and I need to be checked out right now by somebody at your fine establishment. Thank you so much. You can do that at Fred Meyer, too. Red phone, press zero, gives you the all store.
Oh, nice.
Sometimes you have to hit zero twice in rapid succession, and then you can talk to the entire joint all at once.
I'll keep that in mind.
Totally do that. Try to have a little sense of humor. Try to be wry when you do it, though. The humor goes a long way.
I've never had that problem at grocery stores, but I have had many, many times I've had problems at Rite Aid, which is one of the reasons I talk so much about how I go to Walgreens, like, all the time, because I won't set foot in a Rite Aid anymore. Ever since I had several situations where I would have to do things like me and five other people just standing around and there's no one there. And I'm the one who just ends up shouting, does anyone work here?
Yeah, I feel bad because I know that the reason the guy's not at the register is because they've got him multitasking and doing like 75 different things.
Odds are, if it's Rite Aid, he's elderly or retarded to begin with.
Yeah, and he has no teeth and he's working for like $1 an hour. And, you know, and then I just feel bad. But that's my whole thing. It's like, leave the U-Scan open. And then that guy can stock shelves. I can check out without having to talk to anybody, and everybody's happy. I mean, it doesn't make sense at all.
Every time I've been at IKEA, I've used the scanning thing. Never a problem.
Yeah.
The Swedes know how to do a scanning machine.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. The CEO of Spirit, Ben Baldanza, said, we want to give passengers the ability to choose the extras they want without forcing them to pay for add-ons they don't really want or need. By lowering the fare for everyone and then charging only those who choose for us to print their boarding pass, we let the customer decide, which is a big lie. We know that. European airline Ryanair, which has been sort of a trendsetter with, like, cutting costs on things, they've been charging people for printing boarding passes for a while, although a judge in Spain, it actually went to court in Spain, believes that the fee is actually against the law.
Well, I mean, I guess it's against the law if you don't have any other way to print it yourself. That, I guess, is the, I guess the only thing that's, the only thing that could conceivably be against the law about that, and it's a bit of a stretch, is that if, and it's not really a problem, I would think, in this country, but if you live in a place where it's impossible to print it yourself, because then it amounts to an impossibility in terms of flying, but I don't think that's the case here.
Well, Spirit is also the airline. They began recently charging extra to passengers who didn't pay their baggage fees far enough in advance.
Are they the ones that they have like a picture of Vladimir Lenin or somebody on the back of the...
I think so.
It's like a picture of Leonid Brezhnev on the tail of the plane.
I think you're thinking of Alaska, and that's actually an Eskimo.
Oh.
No. And then last year, Spirit became the first U.S.-based airline to charge for carry-on bags, a move that at the time, by the way, CEO Baldanza called a consumer benefit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's great. Republicans and Democrats in Washington are squabbling over how much budget cutting will be necessary in order to approve an increase in the debt ceiling. Republican Senator Jim DeMint says the long-term solution to the budget problem is a balanced budget amendment.
If there's one thing we should agree on as congressmen and senators, is to stop spending more than we're bringing in.
And worse.
But unless we have a constitutional requirement to do it, I'm afraid we're going to bankrupt our country in the next year or two.
Mm-hmm. A number of Tea Party Republicans, like DeMint, are firmly against raising the debt ceiling unless there's a definite plan in place to dramatically reduce spending.
See, why do they have to do that? Why do they have to go saying things that make sense? Because then it's like I can't wholeheartedly dismiss them with a wave of my hand and everything they stand for. I like to be able to just sort of give a wholesale just condemnation of people without any further. I like to have, you know what I live for? I live for contempt prior to investigation. That really is how I try to, like, just exist every single day. It's just completely angrily deriding, dismissing things that I don't know anything about.
Stories like this do make it difficult
for you. But now I'm screwed. Now, because they have the one good suggestion, and now I'm effed.
If the president and the Democrats will work with the millions of Americans to simply say, okay, 6 or 8 years out, we're going to balance our budget, but we need to raise the debt ceiling today, I think you'd find a lot of people at the table discussing that. If they would come around.
Seriously, and this is like when they have the government shutdown or whatever threats, and I think, and actually, our good friend Seamus weighing in for the day. By the way, weighing in for today from Colorado, where he says self-scan checkout is the only option after 10 p.m. at many places. Hmm. See, that's exactly the way it should be.
Yeah.
Lately, he and I are... Did I tell you that he was in my... He appeared in a dream of mine last night?
Do I want to know about this?
And I don't mean the dream like a Pat Robertson dream or like Seamus told me to run for... office or something. I mean, like, I was dreaming and then he just, like, made a cameo.
Oh.
I'll talk about it next hour. But he and I are on weird parallel, like, mental tracks lately because I was actually just about to say this. Quit typing the word hot. Jesus. My dream and he just typed hot in all caps.
Oh, all right.
But he sort of echoes my thoughts. He just says, like, cut all of it. Cut everything. Shut down every goddamn thing until we come in under budget. Like, period. And if there's some riots and mobs and some people die, then that's just the way the cookie crumbles. But I mean,
and that's the only way they'll learn.
But that's the thing. But nobody gets to leave town. That's how you do it. You get two things. First of all, you just close all of the airlines and all of the train stations anywhere near, like, you know, doesn't matter, Arlington, Fairfax, D.C., the Beltway. You just close all of those things. And then you say, look, we're all just going to sit here, and it'll be like 12 Angry Men sort of meets Escape from Los Angeles. You say, look, we are all going to sit here while the entire country, and it'll start with D.C. because that is just that whole place is just like that's a kind of, that is a part of the city that just wishes desperately that they had more major league sports franchises so they would have more excuses to set fire to things. You just say, we're all going to sit here, and we are just going to breathe the acrid smoke of a country burning around us until you figure out the goddamn stupid budget. And, you know, because if nobody was allowed to fly home to, like, their country, you know, chalet in Vermont or something.
Or hide so they don't have to vote on things.
They don't have to vote. I think they would find it a lot more difficult, to just continue to let this sort of roll over year after year after year. Sons of bitches.
That's right.
All right. Nothing I just said, by the way, is meant as a threat.
Yeah. Let's do science.
All right. Here's your science on the mark for whatever the hell day this is. It is Thursday? Wednesday.
Wednesday,
June 22nd, 2011, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric at 503-252-1609. That is their telephone number. So once the apocalypse comes and goes, you're going to need somebody to... I mean, once the looting and the burning has just razed the entire place, once everything has been reduced to sackcloth and ashes and cinders and so much gravel, you're going to need somebody to do some rewiring and get the lights back on, or otherwise, you have to deal with flag. You contact Squires Electric. They can take care of that for you. 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. By the way, yesterday, one day of us making that observation about the motion sensing lights not working properly, today, totally working properly. Bam.
That is the power we wield.
Like that. No, but that's really, but that's also Squire's Library. They just said, like, what the hell with this?
Once Donna knew, then it was just a matter of time.
I think they must have just said, like, why did we have somebody else wire this? We are, hold on, Squire's Electric. We should have done this.
Hey!
And then instantly the thing was fixed and it's working properly. And so really, it's no overstating how efficient and reasonably priced they are. And also, you're going to find out up front because they're going to give you an estimate before you do anything else. So you contact Squire's Electric for whatever may be plaguing your home or business, electrically speaking, at squireselectric.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Just as Earth comes with a relatively big moon, more than 1 in 12 Earth-like planets may host a similarly large satellite that helps stabilize the planet's rotation. New calculations of collisions among the embryonic solar system's debris suggest that a pairing like the Earth and moon isn't as uncommon as scientists had thought. This from a team from the University of Zurich in Switzerland and the University of Colorado at Boulder. The gravitational pull of a big nearby moon helps keep a planet from tilting too much on its axis and allows climate to remain relatively hospitable for life.
This is why that ring world thing doesn't work at all.
No. You're right.
Totally spiral off toward the edge of the galaxy.
And it's,
you're thinking of Weave World.
No, I was thinking of Discworld, where everything's on the back of a giant turtle. That wouldn't work either.
Wait, what is Discworld?
That's another series of novels.
But is it by the same guy?
No.
Okay.
The European Space Agency's Rosetta mission, set to become the first craft to observe a comet close up for an extended period of time, has taken its first images of comet Churyumov-Gerasimenko. At a distance of 163 million kilometers from the craft, the comet appears only as a faint point of light, but the glimpse confirms that the onboard camera is actually operating. Rosetta won't catch a second look at this relic from the solar system's formation for another 31 months when the solar-fueled craft awakens from an energy-conserving period of hibernation that began on June 8th. In November of 2014, the craft will release a small lander onto the comet's icy nucleus.
I don't understand that. Okay.
But how can it go onto a nucleus?
Do you really want me to ask?
Sure.
I wasn't going to ask that.
No.
I just don't understand how it is that we can put a lander onto the nucleus of a comet, which is moving, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, comets go really fast. They go, I would say at a considerable rate of speed around the galaxy.
Certainly.
And yet we can't seem to land anything on Mars, which is much, much bigger and therefore relatively is moving slower. And it's huge. And we keep trying to land like radios there. And they just hit the ground and crumble into powder because we can't quite get it right. And yet there's a thing like the size of a football that's just flinging itself around the universe. It comes by like once every jillion years, and we're going to land a thing like right in the center of it.
I know the answer to this. I know why we can't land things on Mars.
Mm.
It's covered with monsters.
Okay, well, there's that.
As we mentioned yesterday, the Food and Drug Administration has unveiled new graphic cigarette warning labels. Cigarette packs will carry one of 9 vivid color images, along with a written warning about the dangers of smoking. Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius says the images are purposely gross.
Kids to understand smoking is gross, not cool. And there's really nothing pretty about having mouth cancer or, making your baby sick if you smoke.
Well, there really is nothing pretty about mouth cancer.
No.
She really is right on that score there.
But she is wrong about cigarettes not being cool.
Doesn't she sound, here's the thing. I would say that smoking isn't cool. Cigarettes are cool.
Yeah.
There's a difference. Yeah. I mean, if you could just pose with a cigarette without actually inhaling it, bam, done. Or you just do the thing they do on the set of Mad Men where it's like lettuce, or whatever, and the thing, it's like a
herbal thing.
It's not even herbal, though, but it is literally, it's like lettuce that they grind up and they put in their cigarettes, because apparently that's the apparently when you burn lettuce, when you dry lettuce and then chop it up and burn it, the way that the smoke wafts out, because of the chemical composition, it actually looks like cigarette smoke. Uh-huh. Where if you burn a lot of other things, the smoke, it comes out in sort of clouds as opposed to rings and sort of, trails, the way that cigarette smoke does. There was a whole article about, an entire piece I read about what do they use for, like, fake drugs and fake whatever in movies. And they were talking about, they use sugar for cocaine and they use lettuce on Mad Men for cigarettes. But yeah, if you could have some sort of a pseudo cigarette, like that's the thing, that's the one thing that electronic cigarette is missing. That electronic cigarette just needs the cool like furls of smoke out of the end of it, because then you can just get your Steve Dallas on and look like a badass.
Yeah, the water vapor isn't quite the same thing.
No, it's ridiculous.
One tobacco company says the FDA's 9 new graphic labels violate the First and Fifth Amendments, Clinical psychologist Jeff Gardier says this kind of imaging does work to curb smoking.
Normally what we see is initially people may be turned off to the ads because they're so heavy-handed. But as there is more media coverage and as it becomes part of the public consciousness, people come to accept it.
I would argue that, I used to just dismiss arguments like that, that if you put graphic advertising up or that if you just had like a big blackened lung, that it would stop people from smoking. I think like a lot of people, you say, well, that's ridiculous. That doesn't work at all. I've augmented my position on that ever so slightly, and it's not even because of cigarette smoking. I'll tell you why. I have come to adjust my thinking on this ever so slightly because of the Faces of Meth campaign, which I do believe has the desired effect. Not totally, and I don't think that anybody who really is bent on taking meth is going to stop it, and certainly nobody who's taking meth is going to see that ad campaign and go, I guess I should knock this off because I'm going to look like one of those pieces of dried apple art in my grandma's fridge. But I do think that the uninformed or the neutral mind seeing the Faces of Meth campaign, I think those things really do have a strong, strong effect. I have no scientific evidence for that, and I have no actual factual basis for that. But my gut sense is that that Faces of Meth campaign is probably, it may be the only effective anti-drug campaign to ever use imagery like that. But I think if there is one that works, it's that. Because I got to tell you, like the cigarette smoking things, don't bother me at all. Like I see the black lung or the guy with the missing jaw that came to my school, don't smoke. And he has like, you know, and he basically just has like he has to put like a plank or something in the bottom of his mouth so his food doesn't fall out. Doesn't faze me in the slightest. Those Faces of Meth things creep me out. They creep me. And I have no inclination to ever take methamphetamine. Those things just, they make my skin crawl.
I have a good suggestion, though, for anybody who's doing some financial planning right now. This right now is probably a very good time to either start or invest in a company that manufactures hip cigarette cases. Because the cigarette packs themselves are going to have these horrible images on them.
Right.
And I predict a resurgence of the custom cigarette case.
See, I think it's the other way around. I think it's just that I think that these will be shocking for like a week and a half and then people won't notice them. Or they will actually like trade them like, you know, like football cards to see who has, ooh, what do you have? Ooh, you have gum disease. Let's see what, oh, ooh, look at this. No, I have emphysema.
Oh, I got guy with a hole in his throat. I don't have that one.
I know a guy who sent away, he sent overseas to Britain to get cigarettes from Britain. A friend of his boxed them up and sent them over here, which I don't know if you can do legally, but he had to like talk to some guy who was able to find them and send them over here just because he wanted to have cigarettes that had the horrible big, charcoal lung in the front of it because they've had those in Britain for a couple years now because they got that they were badass. And everywhere he went, people go, where did you get that cigarette pack? Because in the front, it would just be like a huge rotted mouth or something. And the guy actually got so many responses to it that he just started, when he would buy other cigarettes, he would transfer them to this pack. And he was all like sad when it finally disintegrated. Oh. So I think that they're going to have no effect at all. But I do think that they're onto something with certain kinds of imagery. I just think that the cigarette thing is just not. I think with the cigarette thing, they just go about it all the wrong way. I think they ought to just have a big picture of a drooping penis and just be like, look, smoke and your penis is going to quit working. There you go. End.
And then if you're a lady and you smoke, you don't want to see a big drooping penis.
No, you don't. Or how about this? And again, I don't care if people, damage themselves or not. Whatever. More life left for me. But I'm just, you know. I like to help people think outside the box, Don. I like to help people synergize and network and get up to speed and to create a sort of symbiosis in furtherance and pursuance of their mission statement.
Yeah, PowerPoint.
Click. and one more thing. Here's another thing they could do. You know what they ought to do? On the front, they could just have a picture of... I was going to say like a picture of like your grandmother or somebody who looks like your grandmother, you know, some sort of a negative connotation, sort of the uncooling of cigarette smoking. So you're not picturing Humphrey Bogart or Don Draper. You're just picturing like that Maxine chick from the comic strip in a house dress and bunny slippers.
Yeah.
Like with a bingo dauber or something. But how about this? I'll go you one better. How about the government mandates that cigarettes be done Bertie Bott style? Where like one in every pack tastes like vomit.
Oh, that is a good idea.
But you don't know. Yeah. And here's the thing: you don't even know when you start smoking it. You won't know until you get halfway through the cigarette.
I do like the idea though of including pictures of unappealing celebrities on the thing. Like there could be a picture of Mickey Rourke with his teeth out smoking
totally.
A cigarette.
Exactly.
That would stop you.
Or how about this picture of Roger Ebert?
Oh, yeah.
I don't mean to be cruel, but
no,
come on.
But yeah.
I mean, and that wasn't from smoking, apparently.
No.
That was just, you know, got hit with the cancer stick for no reason.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, this could be you.
Well, Gardier says the image of smoking in the media has helped curtail smoking.
Let's see. I think I already played that. Is this the third one?
There were two that had a similar
lead-in. Let's do this.
Back in the day, everyone had a drink in the left hand and a cigarette in the right hand, and it was fashionable. Now we do see people losing fingers, losing limbs.
Oh,
we had this one yesterday.
There's nothing
I think
sexy
that's why
about that at all.
That's why I pulled that, because he was back on the whole thing about losing
limbs.
Fingers. That's wonderful. Fantastic.
When Tokyo Sewage approached Mitsuyuki Akita, a researcher from Okayama Laboratory, and asked him to explore potential uses for an overabundance of sewage mud, Akita found that because of all the bacteria.
Sewage mud.
Yeah, just sludge left.
Like two of the worst things on Earth. Like, how can we make this mud worse? How can we make this sewage worse? I know.
Yeah, and I think calling it mud is sort of a misnomer, because it's not really dirt. It's like human waste and stuff.
Right.
Akita found that because of all the bacteria, the mud contained large amounts of proteins. Akita and his team isolated these proteins, combined them with a reaction enhancer, and put it in an exploder, and thereby created meat. Sewer meat. The lab-grown steak is made from 63% proteins, 25% carbohydrates, 3% lipids, 9% minerals. Researchers enhanced the flavor with soy protein and used red coloring to give it an appetizing, meaty charm. According to Digital Trends, initial taste testers have said these steaks even taste like beef.
But it's made of poop and mud.
It's made of poop. It's recrafted poop.
It's poop steak.
It's poop steak.
That's... what cut of the animal is that, so I can avoid that?
Experts say, in theory, it is safe, but to kill any toxic pathogens, the meat must be cooked. Douglas Powell, a professor of food safety at Kansas State University, said, in the food safety world, we say, don't eat poop. But if you're going to, make sure it's cooked.
But if you're going to.
Powell did say there was a potential for cross-contamination in the lab where the bowel loaf was developed.
Don't ever say bowel loaf again. Don't.
But then
don't
said,
ever.
The idea is not that different from eating vegetables that have been fertilized with manure
it's
or other excrement.
It's very different.
Theoretically, he said, there's nothing wrong with this. It could be quite safe to eat, but I'm sure there's a yuck factor.
This is like that episode of Better Off Ted, where they created that synthetic meat that tasted like sadness.
Yes.
Okay.
So there you go. That's all. Poop
fantastic.
Steak.
Fantastic. All right. Well, I was wondering what to start franchising. Okay. Are we done with science? Did you say that that's the...
Yes, we are.
I'm sorry. My brain was so clogged with poop steak there that I wasn't able to...
Bowel loaf?
So awful. Why would they ever... I mean, why would they have gone right to let's make steak out of it?
Probably because he saw the high protein content. And he said, this could be something that people could eat if we reconfigured it somehow.
See, but wouldn't you... Like, your brain would have thrown, like, there's like it would have been a fuse somewhere in the backwater of your head that would have said, shh, people won't eat poop steak, and then move on to the next idea.
Yeah, I would have said, can we make it taste, you know, like cookies?
You would have briefly, but see, not even then. You would have just briefly, that would have gone into the trash pile in the back of your mind under ideas that you considered late at night when you were stoned for like half a second, and then you decided it was a terrible, terrible notion.
But again, that's the reason I'm not a scientist, because I don't think of things like that. I don't think, you know... I'm gonna create a robot and then teach it to punch a guy.
Oh, wait. Was this in Japan?
I believe so, yes.
Oh, well, okay. What am I asking? Of course.
Of course.
It
was Tokyo Sewage, and they asked the scientists to figure out potential uses for the leftover sludge.
That's what they're telling us. Really, the question was like, what can we do to shock the Western world next? What are we... we've taken the tentacle rape thing as far as we possibly can. We got these machines that sell soiled underwear from, like, you know, from young girls. What else can we do to terrify white people? I know, we'll eat our poop. No, but we'll form it into steak shape first and make them think that we're going to be, you know, exporting it all over the world. Get on that right now. That was the mission. All right. Well, there you go. There's your Science in the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. Sorry about the negative association with the whole thing. You know, it's luck of the draw when you advertise. You just never know that's in radio terms, they call that an adjacency problem. One never knows what one will follow.
Science is often icky.
I think Keelan notes rather unnecessarily, this product would have a 0.0% share of the black community. Okay. Thanks for making the distinction.
White people, however, over the poop stank.
Lining up for it. Camping overnight.
Already selling franchise opportunities.
All right. Let's be done with that. There's your...
A hospital in Wales apologized for giving elderly and frail patients a tambourine to attract nurses' attention. A National Health Service watchdog found that the musical instrument was the only emergency call system available to patients using a day room at the Cardiff Royal Infirmary's West Wing. The son of a 90-year-old patient photographed the tambourine and claimed that there was also a pair of maracas in the day room for the patients to use if they needed to call for help.
Where was this?
In Wales. Cardiff, okay. Wales.
Don't they have power in Wales?
My mother and other patients won't go to the day room because of their fear of being left in a distressing situation, particularly toileting, the relative said.
I love toilet as a verb. I love that so much. It makes me so happy when someone uses toilet as a verb.
I gave the tambourine a good hard shaking. After 16 minutes, I gave up because no one responded.
I'm trying not to let the Family Guy style cutaway gag play in my head, but it just, you know, because it's just a repeat for like 14 minutes. Oh, it's funny.
Cardiff and Vale of Glamorgan Community Health Council Chief Officer Steve Allen said, this is totally inappropriate. Patients shouldn't have to resort to shaking a tambourine to get a nurse's assistance.
Or their moneymaker. They shouldn't have to shake that either.
Ruth Walker, Executive Director of Nursing for the Cardiff and Vale University Health Board, apologized for the tambourine. She said, this does not afford any patient dignity and respect, let alone safety. The care and dignity of all our patients is vitally important to everyone at the health board, and we sincerely apologize for any distress this has caused.
This is awesome. They should amp up the challenge for next time. They should make it like you have to play like castanets or a zither.
Or they give them all kazoos. If you need somebody, just and someone will come. Trust me.
But what they'll do when they get there depends on what song you sing.
Right.
If you just need like a sponging, it's the William Tell Overture. But if you have to play chopsticks if you want to be taken to the bath.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
First Lady Michelle Obama continued her visit to South Africa Wednesday with a speech to a group of young women in Soweto. She led them in a chant using a line made famous by her husband during his presidential campaign.
Let's see.
What do you say? Yes, we can. What do you say? Yes, we can.
No, we're done. That's it.
Of course, they don't know what that means.
No.
Because, she challenged them to each find a social problem they could fight for.
While today's challenges might not always inspire the lofty rhetoric or the high drama of struggles past, the injustices at hand are no less glaring, the human suffering no less acute. So make no mistake about it, there are still so many causes worth sacrificing for.
Okay.
Boston Mayor Thomas Menino is calling on Nike Town to remove a display from its Newbury Street storefront, which includes T-shirts with pill bottles and the words Get High and Dope, along with its Just Do It slogan. Menino was walking along Newbury Street with his wife over the weekend when he saw the T-shirts. He wrote in a letter to Nike, "Your window display of T-shirts with drugs and profanity wordplay are out of keeping with the character of Boston's Bay, not to mention common sense." Menino says he believes the T-shirts are promoting drug use and, quote, this is the wrong message for Nike to send.
Well, this doesn't sound like something. I mean, honestly, this really doesn't sound like something Nike would do. So the shirt itself has pill bottles on it?
It has something that looks like a pill bottle overturned, like a prescription, like an RX sign or something like that. And something is spilling out of it. I wasn't sure what it is. And it says, get high. There's another one that says, dope.
What would Nike's conceivable angle on this be?
Basically, they are...
Do they get high on life?
Yes.
Ah, I see.
They are using certain phraseology to encourage you to be excited about action sports and using like things that boneheads who, surf and ride BMX bikes would use. Like something's dope.
You've lost me again. I don't...
Well, like saying something's dope.
Oh, I see.
Sports are dope.
You just turned into Michael Rapaport. It's not dope. It's not fresh. Okay. All right.
And I can't remember what the one that he said was profanity. There was one that was just kind of weird sounding. That was vaguely can't remember what it was, but it was vaguely sexy. But it wasn't, certainly wasn't profane. In the letter, he also pointed to the city's substance abuse prevention efforts, which have been nationally recognized as an example worth following by federal officials, and said, I would hope Nike would set the same bar. He also said, there's a fine line between edgy and stupid. They put their sneakers on and ran right over there.
All right, I'm done caring about this guy.
Yeah.
No, he's not even good for sound bites.
No.
All right.
There's a picture. Like, here's one of the shirts. It just says, get high, and has a Nike swoosh on it.
See, now that's the thing I could see Nike doing. It was the, I'm wondering if the pill bottle thing was actually the store's display and not Nike's display. In other words, that it didn't come from, like, Nike HQ. That was like, they hired, like, Phil in the back room. Phil, can you decorate this window display over the weekend? And he went, get high. I got some pill bottles in my car. Hold on.
No, it's actually on the shirt, though. I saw I can find this. It's kind of smallish, but see.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
It says dope, and it has something that looks like a pill bottle. I'm not sure what it is.
That doesn't really scream Wyden Kennedy or anything.
No, it's not a particularly clever or interesting ad campaign.
I wonder if somebody's working off some like community service hours or something at the Nike design department. Like the guys in the photo lab got caught blowing a joint over the weekend or something, and so this is like their penance.
They had one of those meetings where someone said, you know, our ad campaigns have been just a little too clever and a little too smart.
What do we have that's stupid?
What about our idiot demographic? What do we have for them?
Mouth breathers need clothing, too.
Yeah, they've got money to spend.
This clothing is for your average gum chewer. And you're going to be, hearing your entertainment news here just a moment. Mm-hmm. Coming up next hour, God damn, it's 12:50 already. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Today we have an Obama watch, penis watch. Also, Ms. Anna Griffin going to be joining us in the studio to talk about life into this county and city.
And how smart she is.
Also how smart she is. And also, by the way, I don't know if you read this piece of hers in the Oregonian for a couple days ago, but it's about her. They've got a snake living in their house now. Because they've got sort of a babysitter that's kind of living with them, you know, for the summer. That's sort of like an in-resident babysitter.
Never hire a snake for a babysitter.
Well, that's what I said, but nobody listens.
Snakes eat babies.
So they have this babysitter move in who apparently brought a king snake with her. And so her son and the king snake, like best pals, heading off for a summer full of adventures. But here's the thing.
I smell sitcom idea.
But the thing is, you know who doesn't care for snakes all that much is Anna Griffin herself. Mm. So as she put it in her... She did use the obligatory, why did it have to be snakes, line in her column. So we'll talk a bit about that and other things. That's next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
The music editor for Minneapolis' City Pages had no idea what was about to blow up when she wrote a less than favorable review of CeeLo Green's Target Center performance last week. Andrea Swenson said, this is the first time I've gotten this visceral of a response back from somebody. The star of NBC's hit show The Voice took to Twitter to express his displeasure over Swenson's review. He called her... Oh, this is supposed to be entertainment, by the way. Where's my entertainment news?
This whole show is supposed to be entertainment.
Yeah, that's true. CeeLo Green went on Twitter and talked about her review. He called her gay and asked if his masculinity offended her. Swenson said, I just retweeted it because I thought it was kind of unusual, and then I got a really big response from my followers immediately. Much of the response was from people calling the comments anti-gay. CeeLo Green responded by pulling down the posts along with those from fans and putting out a statement that read, I always expect people to assume that everything I do is part of my character and sense of humor. I assumed that whoever it was would assume it was all in good fun. It wasn't taken so well, apparently. I most certainly am not harboring any sort of negative feeling toward the gay community. It was kind of one of those, like, apologizing without apologizing things, said Swenson. While she was not personally offended by the remarks, Swenson does want the incident to serve as a lesson to all celebrities in this age of vast reasoning technology. She said, you should be totally careful about what you say because you're not able to show that you're being sarcastic or that you're laughing. It's just words, and it can be interpreted in all kinds of ways.
Okay, then.
So, again, he was mad about a review she wrote. He called her gay and said that maybe she was jealous of his masculinity.
Well, do we know that that's not true, Don? I mean, have we really done lab studies to prove that she was not, in fact, threatened by his masculinity?
Then he pulled them down and said, it wasn't anti-gay. Well, he kind of was a little bit, really. I don't know. Pixar head John Lasseter is back behind the camera with Cars 2. During a recent Cars 2 press conference in Hollywood, Lasseter explained why, for the love of God, he would make a sequel to the worst movie Pixar has ever made. Oh, wait, no, he didn't say that. He said why he loves being a filmmaker and talked about Pixar's creative environment.
At Pixar, we always look forward. We're always concentrating on our stories, our movies, what's next. We usually have numerous, you know, four or five films working at once at the studio. And someone had to remind us at the beginning of this year, we took a calculator out and figured out, oh, wait, this is our 25th anniversary. It's like we were not expecting it, you know. And it was, but this year we have kind of stopped and taken a look at sort of what we have accomplished, and we're very, very proud of Pixar, proud of the movies we created, proud of our people and what we've built, and the culture that we've built. Pixar is very, very unique. I don't know how many of you have visited Pixar, but it is a very unique.
In case you're wondering, I don't know when this clip ends.
Where creativity is the most important thing, making the films the best that they can be.
Wait.
And what's nice is that there's a passion for Pixar that is just really prevalent.
Blah, 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 blah,
at,
Pixar.
At Pixar. Everybody, talk to anybody, what's the most important thing to you? And they'll say Pixar.
Pixar.
Number two, it's the movie they're working on. Number three, four, five. And somewhere down the line, it becomes about themselves. Because it's
and then
just,
even further down than that is their family.
Making great movies at Pixar. And what's nice about...
Hold on a second. Let me just... I have to adjust this. There we go. That's better.
Thank you. I love those junket clips. Lost actor Terry O'Quinn will have a recurring role in the second season of Hawaii Five-0 as a former Navy SEAL commander who served in the Vietnam War with Steve McGarrett's dad.
Awesome. Here's the thing about Terry O'Quinn. It doesn't matter what he's in. I don't ever hold it against him because he's awesome in everything, and the stink of bad projects never clings to him for some reason. He's like Tommy Lee Jones.
And he's just so amazing. He always deserves to earn a living no matter how he has to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you just see him in some of the worst films and television shows, but he's just such a badass, and he's just so unbelievably, just irrevocably awesome that you just give him a pass for anything.
Actress Judy Greer is engaged to producer Dean Johansson. You know, Greer from Mad Love, Arrested Development, particularly. The couple met on a blind date last year, and Johansson asked Greer for her hand during a recent excursion to Napa.
She's not Kitty, is she?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I dig her.
Yeah, she's great. Singer Katy Perry treated her dancers and crew members at the Ramid Spa in the St. Regis Hotel during a June 8th stop in Atlanta. The crew received customized facials, which cost $255 for 90 minutes, as well as aromatherapy massages for $240.
Okay, then.
Must be nice.
You're in a bitter mood today. Does something?
I have a bad
morning or something?
I'm just angry. I'm just cranky and angry. I'm just life in general.
You can't be cranky at life in general. I mean, you can, but I mean...
Can't I, Rick?
I mean, today seems like a sharper, more refined kind of bitterness. Seems like if you're angry at life in general, it would actually just be sort of... It would be dissipated. It would be prorated over everything, and it would not... It would almost be not noticeable. It would just be like a tone. It'd be like notes of pepper.
I think I'm just a little grumpy because, you know, my husband has, like, these ongoing medical things that he has to deal with, and we still haven't gotten our furniture moved into our house. So I'm, like, still... It's still like I'm living like I'm a hobo. You know, I'm like, you know, cooking a can of soup over an open fire in the middle of my living room floor. And it's just, there's no way for an adult to live.
Nick Fish is on the case, Don. Don't worry about it.
You know, they've been making great strides.
It's true.
Year five of their 10-year program.
I thought, like, Katy Perry had wronged you somehow.
Oh, no.
Or something like that.
I just dislike her for some reason. I'm really not sure why.
I have no explanation. I mean, I feel the same way. It's sort of like just a low-grade irritation at her. But it's like, she doesn't suck any more than anybody else. There's nothing in particular that's terrible about her.
Lately, I've just been irritated a lot at people that are really super famous and don't seem to really contribute anything of need. Like, I got this magazine yesterday. I was looking at it, and there was a huge ad for shoes starting with Brooke Burke. And I just stared at her for about 10 minutes, racking my brain, trying to figure out why she's famous. And I don't know. I have no idea what she ever did to cause her to become famous.
She had a lot of sex with Dave Navarro.
And that, okay. Because other than her, like, hosting shows like Rockstar Supernova and stuff, I don't know where she came from. I don't know what she ever did to get to that point. And I don't know why she's still here. And I find it irritating.
Hey. Look over there. On that note, we end this episode of Legion of News. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program is next hour featuring Penis Watch, Obama Watch, and Ms. Anna Griffin from the Oregonian. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk. Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, we thank you for listening. We will see you again tomorrow for another episode of Legion of News at 12 p.m. Pacific time here at Cascadia.fm. Have a safe and satisfying Wednesday.